The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
I'm always so excited to chat to Rolene, and I don't know if she was listening earlier, but Rolene, guess what I played earlier?
You must have played Depeche Mode.
I wish, but thank you. I'm going to definitely find some. I played Disturbed.
I'm not even going to hazard trying to sing, because my Sounds of Silence, when I sing, people pray for Sounds of Silence. Let me put it to you that way.
Well, I know that it's also one of your favorite renditions of Sound of Silence. So I was telling Gary in the studio that you would have loved hearing that particular version.
And I'm delighted to be in the company of two such illustrious gentlemen this afternoon. You don't get luckier than me, people.
So, Rolene, let's get right down to it. There seems to have been a change of heart when it comes to the Ukrainian situation from the side of Israel. A lot's been happening. Israel sent out a shipment of helmets and flak jackets to Ukraine, and Health Minister Nitzan Hort has even announced that injured soldiers will be airlifted at cost to Israel. Why are these plans changed? Tell us a little bit more about it, and are we definitely seeing some form of change in respect of Israel's policy of neutrality in this conflict?
The discussion around sending some kind of military aid has been going on, and Israel has faced quite a lot of criticism from people saying, you know, Israel's got all this incredible technology, why aren't we sending it to Ukraine? And as you mentioned, we do have a very precarious situation on our border with Russia. Russia military is stationed in Syria, and we have to work in careful coordination with the Russians anytime Israel wants to engage in operational tactics or operational missions inside of Syria. And these normally involve taking out any kind of weapons transfers either through Syria or Lebanon by the Iranians, or encroachment by Iranian groups or Iranian-backed groups through Syria onto Israeli sovereign territory. But at the outset, the minute the Russian tanks rolled into Ukraine, Israel A, recognized Ukrainian sovereignty, and B, condemned the unprovoked attack on a sovereign state. However, we've been very careful to balance the line. You will often hear our prime minister being very neutral, but our foreign minister taking a much harder stance, co-sponsoring resolutions at the United Nations and criticizing the humanitarian disaster that Russia has engaged in. And we do know it's a humanitarian disaster. Now, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen different behavior coming from Russia that has been quite disturbing with regards to Israel. Israel, before the recent wave of terror, was in a position to be a broker or a moderator between Ukraine and Russia at President Zelensky of Ukraine's request, even saying, you know, maybe Jerusalem would be a neutral venue. Now, several weeks ago, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov made very, very untoward, I'll use that as the only euphemism I can come up with on polite radio, comments with regards to President Zelensky. He said, when he was questioned on Italian television, you know, how can you say the denazification of Ukraine when the Ukrainian president is Jewish? And Lavrov said, you know, even Hitler had Jewish blood, and some of the worst anti-Semites are Jewish, which was profoundly offensive, not just to Israelis, but to Jews around the world. Cut to earlier this week, and we had reports coming in from the foreign media that Russia had reportedly fired an anti-aircraft missile at Israeli jets conducting operations inside Syria. Now, this is the first time that has happened, and I won't say that Israel's changing tack because this has happened, but I think that we are seeing the increasing humanitarian disaster in Ukraine, and we do feel that it's our moral prerogative to take a firmer stance, not only just with the humanitarian aid that we have sent into Ukraine, but now in a very controlled way, sending military aid. So the Ministry of Defense confirmed yesterday that we sent 2,000 helmets and 500 flak jackets for Ukrainian rescue personnel. Now, Israel's being very clear. We are not sending anti-aircraft or any kind of hard military equipment. You know, we also have to consider Israel's considerable threats on our sovereign territory as well.
I don't know if it's a shift in policy or whether some thoughts have now become more outspoken, but the United Kingdom Home Secretary Priti Patel has joined other countries in now condemning the BDS as being a racist and an anti-Semitic organization. The government has also recently announced new laws to combat the BDS. Where is this coming from, and why do you see this shift or this more outspokenness on the part of the UK?
Well, this is a great question, and I think that we have seen bilateral relations between Israel and the United Kingdom, which have always been strong, now becoming even stronger. And I think for BDS, which is the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement, the jig is up. Not only have they made it clear on their website and in their rhetoric what their end game is, but their actions have proven over the years that they are anti-Semitic, and they are, in the words of Priti Patel, the Home Secretary of the United Kingdom, they are racist. You know, the singling out of the Jewish people for opprobrium, holding Jewish people collectively responsible for any actions engaged in by Israel is racist. So I'll read to you what Priti Patel had to say. She said that holding the Jewish community collectively responsible for what happens in the Middle East is, by my definition, racist. Everything we have seen around the BDS movement is racist, including the anti-Semitic tropes, the cartoons, the chants, and the flag waving. In my 12 years in Parliament, it is utterly appalling that anti-Semitism has been on the increase. It has infiltrated our politics, our political dialogue, and discourse. That is completely unacceptable. Anti-Semitism is racism in my book. It really is. And she spoke about the banning of Hamas, or the proscribing, which is the legal term, of Hamas, saying it was a moral imperative. Now, what is very, very interesting is that just last week, His Royal Highness Prince Charles, standing in for Her Majesty the Queen, opened Parliament and read out the Queen's speech, which is written by the government. It's not written by the Queen, it's written by the government, and it spoke about 38 laws that they want to introduce during the coming year. And one of those laws is cracking down on boycotts, divestment, and sanctions. And Priti Patel went on to say that her party, the Conservative Party, which is the ruling party, will be introducing legislation that makes it illegal for British public bodies to cooperate or do any work with BDS.
Sure, that's very hard-hitting. And for once, we're seeing a government coming out a lot more outspoken that in the past has been somewhat quiet on this important subject.
We have heard, because Britain now joins Austria and Germany in calling BDS a racist and anti-Semitic endeavor. And the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement, which employs the tactics of boycotts and the labeling of Israeli products, looks a whole lot like something that we saw in 1938 in Germany. So they've been called out by Austria and Germany. Then you must know this is a racist, anti-Semitic endeavor.
Talking about anti-Semitism, the US Congress passed by a landslide a resolution condemning anti-Semitism. I would have thought that something like this would have been in place and would be widely spoken about and condemned in the US. What does this resolution state exactly?
Well, that is a great comment. You know, one would think that in today's world, in 2022, that anti-Semitism would be a thing of the past, that it wouldn't take having to have proper sessions of Congress or sessions of Parliament anywhere in the world to discuss the problem that is anti-Semitism. But yesterday in Congress, voted in overwhelmingly by 420-1, a statement by Congress taking a stand against anti-Semitism in the United States. And for all those sitting at home saying, did the squad vote in favor? Well, according to the reports coming in from Capitol Hill, there were no abstentions to this. And the only person to vote against it was Republican Representative Thomas Massey from Kentucky. But he has a history of some really, really dubious comments himself. So what the resolution states, and it's based largely on reports conducted by organizations like the Anti-Defamation League that did an audit of anti-Semitism over the past year and found that it has increased by 34% since 2020, and that it was the highest year on record since the ADL was founded in 1979, which is astonishing. But the resolution says, you know, it recognizes the long history of Jewish Americans and their contributions to the country and also to the struggle for social justice. It recognizes that anti-Semitism is an insidious form of prejudice that goes back millennia. It calls on elected officials, faith leaders, civil society leaders to use their pulpits, to use their microphones, to use their platforms to condemn and combat and all manifestations of anti-Semitism. And it calls on them to combat any denial and distortions of the Holocaust, which would explain why Massey stepped out. It calls for an amplification on the fight against global anti-Semitism and calls for a task force to combat online anti-Semitism where it's particularly rank. And it goes on, but it does lay the foundations for a very, very firm stance of fighting anti-Semitism, at least in the United States.
So it's fascinating that this gentleman from Kentucky, and I say this gentleman in inverted commas, voted against this. It just shows how inherent some people's racism and anti-Semitism spreads. And then we see that the squad introduced a resolution that condemned the establishment of Israel. Very quickly, explain to us, does anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism sit in the same class, or is there a difference between the two? Because there seems to be a lot of confusion about the two.
Well, that's a brilliant question. First of all, let's define Zionism. And simply put, Zionism, and this is defined by the greatest civil rights campaigner, Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King, who said that Zionism is nothing less than the yearning of the Jewish people to return to their ancient and ancestral homeland. So that's acknowledging the indigeneity of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. And of course, we know the history of State of Israel has been established at the same time that offer was made to the Arabs, who turned it down, preferring instead to go to war, a war which they lost, and the rest is nearly eight decades of conflict. But a lot of people don't understand that denying the Jewish people the right to their to self-determination, to their peoplehood in their ancestral homeland, and we call it Zion in reference to Jerusalem because another name for Jerusalem is Zion, is inherently anti-Semitic. It is saying that all the other nations and ethnicities of the world have a right to their indigeneity, have a right to their homelands, have a right to their identity, except the Jewish people. And that is why anti-Zionism is seen specifically as anti-Semitism. You cannot separate Jews and Jewish identity from the land of Israel. And now today we have a state of Israel in that ancestral land. And it's such a huge part of Jewish identity.
Rolene, thank you. That was an answer that made a lot of sense. and in fact helped me to understand a lot more about what's been happening and what's going on and people's thoughts. I'm going to keep in mind that if I stand in again one of the days, that we'll play some Depeche Mode for you. But do know I was thinking of you during Disturbed and the Sound of Silence, and I look forward to our coming chats.